I call a meeting of the Safety and Security Committee to order. We'll start with the safety contact.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee. The safety security contact this morning, as we're about to enter the holiday seasons, we know that many of the gifts that will be purchased will be of electronics means, whether it's a pad, a pod, an iPhone. They have several things in common. They are portable, easy to steal, extremely valuable to thieves, and so forth. There are several opportunities or activities that we would consider regarding your new device. We recommend that you register your device with the manufacturer, keep the serial numbers recorded in a safe place, keep your device concealed as much as possible, and if you must use your device while you're in the metro system, avoid standing or sitting near the doors. Periodically look up and be aware of your surroundings and report unusual or suspicious activity to the nearest Metro Transit police officer or Metro employee. Mr. Chairman, this morning I would like to introduce to you two of my deputy chiefs, Deputy Chief Jeff Delinsky, who heads up our Special Operations Bureau, which consists of our Special Response Team, our motors, our Metro Bomb Techs and Explosive Ordnance Canines, as well as the Metro Bus Enforcement Unit. Also would like to introduce Deputy Chief Ron Pavlik, who heads up the day-to-day operations of our patrol operations. The majority of transit police that you see on a daily basis operate under his leadership. I would like to provide you with an update on the fact that there are no current or credible.
Could I just finish with the agenda in the minutes before
okay.
we get started? Could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
And we have the minutes of the November 17th meeting. I have a motion to approve the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. And the this is the quarterly meeting in which we review security, and I will turn it over to the chief for the briefing, both on where we've been in the past quarter, as well as a specific discussion about bus security. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and my apologies. I would like to report that there are no current credible threats to the system for the holiday season. In consultation with the Department of Homeland Security or the Federal Bureau of Investigations, we don't have anything that we are actively working now. We would just like to briefly report that in connection with the Occupy DC protests that we have been working with the United States Park Police as well as the Metropolitan Police Department, and we are constantly being aware of the metro stations that are in around that particular area, and we have not to date had any problems. Also would like to bring the attention to the members of the committee reference to a homicide that took place on a W4 bus that occurred and around midnight, October 20th, well, the victim was shot several times in the face with a semi-automatic weapon. Two subjects were identified as being participating in this event, and thanks to the quick response based upon the cameras that are on board our buses, we were able to work with the Metropolitan Police Department and the Mobile Crimes Lab to get information that was pertinent, and that arrest was really quick. These subjects were taken into were arrested in Florida. We also had a shooting on the U6 Metro bus route. Two victims boarded the bus in the area of J Street on November 13th, approximately 6:47 in the morning. One subject wearing a black ski mask approached the exterior of the bus, fired three shots through the back window, striking both victims. The victims fled the bus, and the bus operator left the scene to a place of safety a few blocks away. Both victims had non-life-threatening injuries, and one was actually treated on the scene and released. Again, DVR footage from the bus proved to be valuable, and we are working in concert with the Metropolitan Police Department on that particular case. On November 22nd at Franconia Springfield Metro Station, transit police were summoned to a subject that intentionally jumped from the top level of the garage. Again, Fairfax County Police were the first on the scene, encountered the subject who had called 911 and stated that he needed assistance. Upon contact, Fairfax County engaged the subject in a conversation for a brief period of time when the subject tossed his wallet at an officer, then jumped off the garage. The subject sustained massive injuries but is expected to survive. And we would also like to report on the recent shootings in and around the Anacostia Metro stations. Metropolitan Police Department, 7th District, is investigating neighborhood quarrels involving rival schools. These crimes have not occurred on Metro property. However, the Metro Transit Police is maintaining communications on a continuous basis with the Metropolitan Police, 7th District's investigated regarding this event. And so now for the third quarter presentation overview. Today's presentations will review part one crime statistics for the third quarter of calendar year 2011, which includes the month of July, August, and September. Comparisons will be made to 2010 statistics for the same time period. We will also discuss crime prevention initiatives, enforcement initiatives, and new technologies that we've been utilizing, and a portion of the presentations will include an overview of bus-related crimes as requested by Mr. Downs, and the efforts to provide a safer riding experience for our bus operators as well as our customers. We believe today's briefing is an example of good news for our community as the Metro Transit Police continues to explore all opportunities to provide a secure riding environment for our customers and our employees. And so now I draw your attention to the chart that's depicted before you, and it looks at the various modes of transportation. We have the Metro Rail depiction at the top, and crime rate is 32% below calendar year 2010, again for the third quarter. And we show a 17% decrease when compared to calendar year 2011 second quarter. When we look at our parking related crimes, we're showing a 25% decrease, again in comparison to 2010 third quarter, and a 55% higher increase than calendar year 2011 for the second quarter. Metro bus crime rate is 25% below the same time period for 2010, and is 56% higher than the calendar year 2011 report that we gave back several months ago for the second quarter. The next chart depicts those Part 1 crimes, and again, these are crimes that we report to the Federal Bureau of Investigations that are the more serious crimes. However, in the category of thefts, thefts could be the stealing of a pen, but it's because it's a theft, it's considered a Part 1 offense. And in the area of larceny from autos, we show a 6% decrease. Theft of auto parts, we show a 45.5% decrease. The larceny of bicycles, we show 19.4% decrease. Larcenies from buildings that we own, 60% decrease. And attempt auto theft shows a 39% decrease in comparison to 2010. Next, we look at Part 1 crimes against persons, and these are a variety of different types of robberies, whether it's robbery snatches, which shows a 21% decrease, robbery force and violence, which shows a 22% increase, however, that's an increase of 5 reported crimes. Robbery while armed is a 64% decrease in comparison to 2010. Robbery pickpocket is a 21% decrease. Robbery fear, it's a 25% decrease, and aggravated assault was a 42% decrease. They're all trending downward with the exception of the robberies, force, and violence. So to talk about the various highlights of the third quarter, taking into account July 1 through September, we received 16,850 calls for service for a variety of different things. That is a 6.8% increase from the same time period in 2010. We had 446 arrests. We issued approximately 1,897 civil or criminal citations for fare evasions, public conduct ordinances. Those are the eating, drinking, and smoking violations. And we've had 14 bus operator assaults, of which we can go into specific details later as relates to what type of assaults are we talking about, whether spitting, throwing a bag, or assault with a deadly weapon, or whatever. We are looking at the comparison relative to the Part 1 crimes for 1 million passengers, and that is 4.75, which is low, which we expect it to get even lower, but it is, when we look at the next chart, when we look at comparison of the crime to the region and the crime that's happening in the metropolitan transit system, most of the crime is measured by Part 1 crimes per 1,000 persons, where the crimes that we capturing is for millions. And so you can see just by that chart that it just doesn't even register to an amount that is really, really prevalent. Although we take the position that one crime on the metro is one crime too many, but the same activity in and around the stations in the jurisdictional areas, you can be assured that the crime in metro is a lot, lot lesser. The next slide depicts the top 10 metro rail stations system-wide, Part 1 crimes. And so as we look at these listings of stations, and we look at, as an example, College Park, and we see 26 Part 1 crimes, it also should be worthwhile to note that in College Park, 96% of those Part 1 crimes were crimes against property, meaning that they were breaking into vehicles that were parked in various locations. It did not involve an assault against a person. Of those 26, there was a crime that was committed against the person. And when we go down the list and look at Southern Avenue, the same thing holds true. 95% of those crimes were crimes against property. The difference is Deanwood, where the majority of those crimes were crimes against person. 89% of the crimes in and around the Deanwood area were crimes against person. Suitland, 65% property. Greenbelt, 72% property crime. Addison Road, 79. Capitol Heights, 79. Largo Town Center, 94%. And again, in Anacostia, the majority of those crimes were crimes against person. It was 78% crimes against persons in and around the Anacostia station. So if we go to the next slide, again, it's a depiction of those stations within the District of Columbia, and it lists whether or not how many crimes we had as it relates to how many arrests that were consummated as a result of those crimes. And so it lists Deanwood as number one, going down to Rhode Island Avenue as the least crime, Part 1 crime station in the system. We continue on relative to Maryland, and we find that the majority of these stations happen to be in Prince George's County. In fact, pretty much all of these are in Prince George's County. And again, when we look at the types of crimes that we're talking about, even though when you violate a person's property, when you break into their vehicle, it's personal, but they are not crimes committed against the person as such. When we look at the Commonwealth of Virginia and we look at Vienna as the leading entity that reports crime, we see that there's none in Vienna, and it goes down to East Falls Church that reports one Part 1 crime for the third quarter of calendar year 2011. And so now as the next slide talks about the depiction of holiday crime prevention initiatives, I would have to personally commend board member Ms. Hampshire Cowan, as we had meetings with her in discussing crime in and around Prince George's County, and we met with her on several occasions, as well as the Chief McGow, as well as his deputy chief, and the leadership from my team to come up with ways in which we could reduce the crimes in and around Prince George's County. Many of the initiatives that we've rolled out for the entire system came about as a result of that meeting. And again, thanks to the leadership of our chairman, thanks to the willingness of our general manager and CEO, who is very attentive to what we're trying to do with regards to the transit police, looking at why we do what we do, measuring what we do, and coming up with ways to improve it. We're constantly looking to do those things. And so some of the, we recently had a meeting with the District of Columbia Deputy Mayor of Public Safety, Mr. Paul Kwanda, and again, we discussed things in and around the Chinatown, Gallery Place areas, and they too have concerns as to how we can best eliminate the possibility of crime in and around the metro that has an impact on the commercial businesses within those areas. And again, it sort of spoke to the partnership that we have with the Metropolitan Police Department and the community within the District of Columbia to sort of eliminate any of those concerns. We also report out on the crime suppression team, which is an initiative that started back in October 20th. I think as a result of that initiative, we've had over 100 arrests. More often that these are arrests that are for robbery, snatches, pickpockets, assaults, theft over $1,000, armed robberies, drug possessions, you name it. And most of these arrests are those arrests that are the work of these police officers who pose as victims. And thanks to our communications department, we have provided publicity that tells our public that if you want to rob somebody in the metro, it may very well be a police officer. So that's been very effective. We're hoping that that word will be spread throughout the community so that our patrons will be safe when they ever enter the subway system. We have a list of different locations where we've had a number of these types of arrests, and we continue to look forward in pushing this initiative further. Also, the next slide are just some examples of regional partnering. The first line supervisors continue to participate in a daily conference call with the Metropolitan Police. This is a very valuable conference call because it sort of reveals the possibility of gang activity or school fights that may take place. And in the District of Columbia, we sort of provide the movement of those students, and they're very important to us so we can diffuse things that may happen at one of our locations. And we, again, are in constant communication with the Metropolitan Police Department. There's also the truancy focus group, which meets monthly. Deputy Chief Pavlik participates in that meeting, and the group focuses on ways to improve and impact the quality of youth in the District of Columbia. We also participated in school outreach programs, again, with Ms. Hampshire Cowens, who has been helpful in Prince George's County to provide contacts with the schools. We attend various school activities. We send department members to speak with youth regarding appropriate behavior while utilizing the metro bus or rail, and to discuss expectations and bring to the attention of our young riders the dangers of horseplay in the metro environment. Falling, the electrical hazards, and thanks to Jim Doherty, the messages that we have in the system. We constantly try to inform our riding public that it's inherently dangerous to be in the subway environment. The next slide depicts what we're doing in regard. I'm sorry. Okay.
Tell me about the Metro Citizen Corps program. What is that?
Metro Citizen Corps, you guys
take that? Yeah. Metro Citizen Corps is a program we started a couple years ago where we take volunteers from the CERT teams in the region, the community emergency response teams. We take those volunteers that are regular Metro riders, and we offer them three-hour training classes on self-evacuation techniques, where the emergency equipment is in the system, how to use the emergency equipment, how to navigate in a tunnel environment if necessary. We take them aboard buses and trains and in stations and show them all of the safety features that we have and all of the hazards that exist. So if they ever were in a situation where they needed to self-evacuate or help others self-evacuate from a station, that they'd be armed with those tools and those skill sets. We have trained probably over 600 volunteers to this point.
Any other questions on the data quarterly report?
Mr. Dillon. Not yet. Yes. My question, Chief, and thank you for your report, has to do with and you make a distinction between the property crimes and the crimes against people in your report. And I recognize that in each case, I think in most of the cases in the district stations, the crimes seem to trend toward people rather than property. Is that a correct assessment?
Most of the stations, the outlying stations, the majority of the crimes that we experience are crimes against the property, the parking facilities where they go out and they break into vehicles and they take either the GPS or the catalytic converter, or they see loose chains that's lying there and they break the windows and take those. Those are the majority of the types of crimes that we have, and it's way over 50 to 60% of the types of crimes that we have are property-related crimes.
And the Deanwood and Anacostia types of crimes are different?
They are different. The Deanwood and Anacostia types of crimes are those crimes against persons, whether that involves robberies. We had robbery, force, and violence, robbery, armed with a weapon,
robbery, snatch, and most of those types of iPhone, iPads types of criminal activities.
Okay, and these crimes are on the property itself, not in the route?
They're either on the bus bay or in the stations or on the trains. As customers are leaving the trains, those are the types of crimes, or out in the bus bays, where robberies may take place.
Okay. And the last question I wanted to ask, and I appreciate the attention that you paid to the school safety issue and for children going back and forth. And I just wanted to understand a little bit more about your partnership with the schools around the metro stations. Obviously, I'm very familiar with Petworth and Fort Totten and the issues that we've had there, and I just want to get some sense from you if those situations are improving or if you're embarking on efforts to get that together.
Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Chief Pavlik, who, again, runs the day-to-day operation, coordinating with all of the jurisdictional agencies, and in particular those schools, communities, and the most
Yeah, we actually do see improvement in the juveniles and the youth behavior there. We do participate in the school assemblies, and that's really a new avenue that we've gone to. We felt it was really important to get inside the school and go over our expectations. Both of the youth disorder that you see would be acceptable on a playground or if you drove by it on a street corner, but it's that fear when you're underground and that kind of disorder that you see. So it's really we're trying to convey to them what the expectations are, their behavior, and we feel the school assemblies is a great resource. So we've actually partnered with the Metropolitan Police, and now we shadow them at school assemblies where they go over expectations on a more of a neighborhood, community-type atmosphere, and then we go over expectations when you're utilizing the metro system.
Thank you.
Yes, Marcel.
Just a quick follow-up to that. Do you intend to have those school sessions every year or every semester? Obviously, the student body changes.
It's an ongoing activity. Oftentimes, in certain areas like Wilson, the Deal area, we traditionally, over many, many years, have gone there, places where we have some situations and problems with the assembly of school kids when you have neighborhoods that are converging on one particular location as far as the bus stop at Minnesota Avenue, as an example, where you have D.C. public schools, charter schools, parochial schools. And so it is fun to get out there working again with the Metropolitan Police to diffuse any possible fight that may take place. And so it's a concerted effort. It takes a lot of personnel to do that, because we feel that we have an obligation to do it, but it is throughout the whole metropolitan system that we are trying to do these activities.
And just a follow-up to the Deanwood Anacostia Station question. From a trend standpoint, have things been improving or has it gotten worse, say, compared to last year in terms of crimes against victims?
I would think that it's improved. Recently, we did a meet the chief where we had leadership from the transit police along with safety out at Anacostia, and listening to the riding public, and based upon that listening opportunity, that was about 2.5-3 hours, we also find out things that are happening in and around that station that is bothersome to some of our customers, whether it's vending cigarettes or doing something or just disruptive behaviors or activities around the bus stops. And so we dedicate our resources. That's one of the locations where we have a permanent police officer because of the consistent problems that we have. And so, again, is getting out there, listening to the public, trying to take advantage of the information that they're sharing with us and take actions moving forward. But the reductions of the robberies, they have decreased, but that station, along with Deanwood, is one that's prevalent relative to crimes against person.
Thank you.
All right, I'll turn it over back to you on buses, where we're concerned both
Absolutely.
About our customers and about our employees.
Absolutely. So I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Chief Delinsky to talk about the high-intensity targeted enforcement and some of the activities in and around our bus deployment.
Okay. HITE stands for High-Intensity Targeted Enforcement. It's an initiative where we gather available resources that are working on the street that day that aren't specifically detailed to an assignment. And we bring them to a specific location where we saturate an entire bus line or an entire bus route for about a 2 to 3 hour period. We saturate it with plain clothes and uniform personnel. So a team of officers in uniform would get on a bus. A team of plainclothes officers, if we get on a separate bus, and so forth until all of our people are on the buses. And they would ride that entire route for a 2 or 3 hour period with the objective of, number one, creating a safe work environment for our office, for our operators, but also for our customers as well. So when they're out on these routes, they take law enforcement action, of course, and then they also act as a preventative as well. We select the locations of these heights based on complaints that we've received, crime trends, and oftentimes at the request of the operators themselves. Yeah. So next slide. The number one complaint that we used to receive from the bus operators is they don't see us very often on the buses, and rightly so, because up to this point, we've always been, the emphasis has always been on riding the buses in plain clothes, not in an undercover type of capacity, but in a plain clothes capacity. So with this new initiative, the operators now see the uniforms on the buses. They know that we're out there, we're a visible deterrent. They feel safer. We interact with the customers a lot better, and it seems to be like a win-win for both sides. We've gotten positive feedback not only from the operators, but the Metrobus Union, Local 689, and our customers also enjoy seeing us out there, like I said.
When a team of plainclothes police are riding the bus, is the operator aware that they are police?
Not in all situations, no.
Yeah.
The idea is to fit in with the community and the environment in such a way that they go undetected until there's a violation, and then they announce themselves. Mm-hmm. Also, what we do is we make sure that the operators, in the case of the height details, are aware that we are out there. We publish the schedules in advance so the operators know that we're on the buses for the height details specifically, but not on a day-to-day basis. Okay, to clarify that. This slide depicts some of the ongoing initiatives under the leadership of Chief Taborn. We established most of these initiatives here. One of the good things that's going on right now is that our Metrobus enforcement officers are actually going to each of the bus divisions and attending their bi-weekly or say bi-monthly safety committee meetings. So this gives the operators an opportunity to speak directly to the officers that are responding to their complaints and their concerns and so forth, and meet them and get to know them a little bit and build that rapport. That has been very positive, of course, and then the officers then have an opportunity to work with those operators to resolve their problems. Okay, next slide. Next slide is one of the newest initiatives by Metrobus. It is the Bus Operator Shields. It's a piece of equipment that we feel very strongly about that will help protect the operators against some of the most common assaults that are taking place on the bus, which are the spitting, the punching, the throwing thing, and so forth. This two-piece shield, as you see in the bottom picture there, has a metal door that will remain closed to protect the operator's lower body. The upper picture there is a plexiglass shield that can be put into place to protect the operator's upper body. It's kind of like what you would refer to as like a bank teller type of situation. In the plexiglass, there's holes so the operator can speak through. It's been tested to ensure that the operator's vision isn't impaired or anything like that. So we feel like if the operator uses this correctly, that it'll protect him or her from any types of assaults that are occurring on the buses. Now, it's not bulletproof or anything like that, so it's not an absolute safeguard against any type of crime that could be committed, but it is, I think, a huge step in the right direction.
And I think this is an idea that came from both Mr. Jack Rico working in partnership with the unions to come up with a way that they both could feel that they could protect the operators. And if I'm not mistaken, one prototype has been approved and will be placed on 51 new buses and delivered by March. and I think they're looking at an additional 250 that will be installed on the Orion 7th fleet in the very near future.
With respect to the operators, are they advised and encouraged to report any potential or real assaults?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the Metro Transit Police will accept and respond to any call for service that reports a crime. If it rises to the level of the elements of a crime, we will take the report regardless of where. We would like to see us respond to that street location. Oftentimes, however, is that the bus operator comes back and reports things at the bus divisions. We still will be dispatched to that location because we want to capture any and all crime that's taken place on our property.
Right. And those reports are what then drive the data that shows
absolutely
up in the quarterly. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Funny.
Question, what's the total cost if we ever eventually outfit our entire fleet with these? And two, are there other systems around the country using this kind of device or other similar devices?
Good morning, Jack Requa. There are other systems that are looking at it. There are systems that are adding shields. The reason the Orion bus, we have primarily Orion and New Flyer buses, Orion had a shield that fit well and that was agreeable with our union members. Cost is about $1,500 for the shield. As the chief mentioned, we've ordered them for the 30-foot buses that will be received this spring. Primarily because those buses are operating out of Southern Avenue and some of the other facilities that have a higher level of crime. We're looking at putting those shields also on buses that go through the rehab program, and we're also looking at there have a couple options that have come forward for the New Flyer buses that we're going to install a couple for demonstration purposes, review it internally, and then make a decision as to whether we should add those on other buses in the fleet. I think as the chief said and the operators have said, not everyone would want to use this. I think some would feel confined. Some think that they can talk their way through a situation better than others, but there's a lot of operators that are out there late at night in some rather difficult areas that would feel a little bit more protection and feel a little safer in trying to provide the service to the customer.
Let me follow on Tony's question. Could you give the board at your next time we get together or at that time after that something about where this has been deployed in the nation, in the country, and what the results have been?
Yes,
a little quick report on that.
We'll provide you a report as to what's developing within the industry around the country and in Canada.
And what the pros and cons and what other, I mean, we'll, for example, you get in a cab in New York and you got this plexiglass, you know, Berlin Wall. We get a cab here in Washington. We don't have that very often. I think, a significant cultural thing. If we're going to do this on the buses, I'd like to know if it's been effective worldwide even.
Okay. Right. We'll find out what we can and we'll get you a report on it.
Sit down. My experience on buses, if they're loaded, the driver has a hard time making himself heard. This doesn't seem to be making that verbal communication process much easier. I think this is a great idea. It solves some security concerns with the drivers, but the internal communication stuff, I hope, is a parallel process with experimenting with this.
We're taking a look at all of the aspects of providing the safety, making sure they can still communicate, and most importantly, make sure that it doesn't impact the visibility of the operator, seeing what's going on in the bus and outside.
Maybe to come back in the report that Tom has asked for, I really would be interested in understanding whether the long-term goal is to outfit the whole fleet or some portion of the fleet, because I'm now a little bit confused about where we're actually going. So I'd like to understand that.
No, we're happy to provide that developing process and what some of the recommendations might be.
And part of this is putting on some buses as a pilot to see what experience we have before we make any decisions to go for the full fleet.
Ms. Mr. Downey, thank you. That was going to be my question. Has the decision been made? Is this just a status update about outfitting the buses this way? So you're saying that you've decided that you're going to test this on 51 buses?
50 then, plus some others, and see how it works, operationally, safety, customers, the whole thing, as well as our bus operators and how they feel safe, so that we can then make some decision with regard to the whole fleet.
Right, and just my kind of gut reaction to this is obviously we want our bus drivers to be safe, but I'm very uncomfortable with this notion of, to me it sends the message that they're not safe, that the bus drivers aren't safe, the people aren't safe, Metro's not safe, and I just don't want an overreaction to, and you know, maybe it's not an overreaction, but I would be interested in how the actual assaults justify walling off the bus drivers, and I'm not sure that that case has been made.
Perhaps in that vein, it would be useful to do some outreach to customers, see what they think. Is this something that they're worried about or something that they think is a good measure?
Okay. We do have the various types of assaults that have occurred against our bus operators. We have roughly, out of the 44 for this year, 5 that involve throwing beverages, cups, soda, water, bit punched, bumped in the chest, a cigarette lighter was thrown, debris from a window, a brick, earring was ripped out and struck, glass that, you know, came in the eye as a result of a rock being thrown. We had 2 that were grabbed by the throat. We had 3 that involved a gun. One was displayed, one was pointed at, and one was implied. And then we had a knife, we had pepper spray, and punch. So the majority of those are, even though they are assaults mounted in nature. Okay, we got a second page. Okay. Punch, spitting, struck in the face, 12. Spitting represented 6. So there's a variety of different types of assaults, but they all fall under the category of assaults.
Porter.
Chief, do you have any idea whether these assaults are simply random? Are they fair disputes? Are they results of fights among customers? Do you have any sense of where this originates?
I would think, and Jack can confirm, that the majority of these have to do with the fares. They stem from fares. Jack?
Yeah, I think I would agree that the people seem to be offended that we ask them to pay to ride.
Well, I mean, because it used to sort of be more of an honor system before the smart cards came into common use. The drivers were supposed to enforce it, but in some of the cases where they felt threatened, they probably did not.
Well, we instruct the operator to, you know, in a polite manner, to request that passengers pay their fare. And right. Quite often, the assault comes after the person boards, either pays or doesn't pay, and we allow them, you know, if we allowed them to ride, that on the way out, they'll throw something at the operator or throw a punch as they leave the bus.
Thank you.
I just wanted to go back to the height initiative and ask you, in terms of the officer deployment piece, how does it affect the overall level of your officer availability? This is a very good response, I think, to many of the questions we've had about visibility and opportunity. But the question is it sustainable, and just how does it affect that?
Okay, and I'll have Deputy Chief Delinsky speak to that. But most of the participating officers that represent this effort come from his bureau, correct?
We're very careful when we schedule the heights because we know there's an awful lot of activities going on in this region, special events, the Verizon Center, football games, things like that. So we try and avoid all the conflicts as much as possible. So in general, we schedule the heights where there isn't any particular event going on in the city where officers will be needed for crowd control or such as the Occupy DC type of protest. We're reluctant to have those types of height details during that time period. So, but with that being said, on the days that there are no events, then we have the officers available that would normally handle crowd control. So we take them and use them for these specific details. And it's only about 2 or 3 hours out of their shift, so then they can go back and act as supplemental patrol officers or other types of services that are needed. So it's just there during that 2 or 3 hour period when there's no other activities going on.
And I assume this deployment vis-a-vis other opportunities is something you deal with the MetroStat process?
Yes. Most of our activities in identifying where we want to do the hike is a result of the data that sort of depicts we have problems on the W-4, the U-6, and so we primarily target those locations where we have problems at, and we drive our participation based upon the MetroStat information. And if, like in the case of Deanwood, Anacostia, we know that that's where we put our crime suppression team there to sort of address the robbery snatches and things of that nature.
That process is really a balancing of
how
to do your job effectively and get the most out of the scarce resource you have.
Absolutely.
Yes, Mr. Downs.
First, I appreciate the reaction about bus security. I think this is a good program. It gives visibility to the issues that bus drivers and passengers face on the bus. To the question of deployment, it says 4 additional officers were assigned to bus. It's a part of the briefing. What is the total deployment to bus within the sworn officer force, and what percent of the sworn officer force is that?
Okay. Right now, if I'm not mistaken, you have 22 officers that are assigned to the Metro Bus Enforcement Division specifically. Deputy Chief Pavlik's patrol scout cars also respond to calls for services on buses. But relative to the actual day-to-day riding of the buses, there are approximately 22 police officers that are riding on our roughly 1,300 buses.
And that's what that total sworn officer force of?
Roughly right around 450.
So 5% of the sworn officers.
Yeah.
It's not going to put a dent in deployable resources. Thank you.
Mostly for Jack. Buried, Chief, thanks. Buried in the report on page 38 is the 6-month crimes on the buses. 219 total over a 6-month period. The biggest one seemed to be assaults. But Jack, if you're right, if the assault is happening because they don't want to pay, fair. We heard from our ridership, John, help me out, our council, our advisory council, I've only been to one of them, that's certainly the case, that the people don't want to pay the fares, but our advisory council people just say, look, their recommendation was let them ride and get them off the bus because that person is endangering other people who are on the bus, and they felt, as riders, that handling it, the bus driver handling it that way would be acceptable rather than putting them all the riders on the bus in a tough position. So I guess the policy is, you know, what's the policy? If somebody doesn't want to pay the fare, do you let them go, or do we have another?
We generally, instead of having trying to create a dispute and a possible assault, is that we allow them to ride. If they're known to be if this is a regular routine, then we ask the police to probably go undercover or be in the area so that we can report this and get the person off safely.
All right. Okay, well, Jack, when you look at these stats, with the police chief versus this shield, mm-hmm. just help us understand the complexity of this, but using some of these statistics.
I just add, I think that the shield is related to the operator, but many of the activities on the bus, you know, are passenger to passenger, which the operator is concerned about the safety of the passengers that are not involved in the incident. Mm-hmm. So we have just as many passenger and passenger type activities on the bus than we do passenger operator activities.
Any other questions? Yes.
Good morning. My apologies to you for being late this morning. Thank you. Question. Obviously, any crime is more crime than we need to have in terms of numbers, and there's a limit to the amount of resource that you can deploy. But in a larger context, for what types of strategies do you observe in other communities, other cities? Because we're not the only city or the only region that experiences this sort of harm to its riders and to its system. What types of other strategies do you see and learn about in other communities that have been effective that we might try to deploy here? And one question that constantly comes up in my mind, and you may have addressed it before I got here, and I apologize if you did, but sworn officers are very expensive. We understand that, and for good reason. On the other hand, there are less expensive personnel options in terms of contracted services, non-sworn officers, unarmed officers, or uniformed personnel that might be deployed to routes that are more subject to the kinds of crimes that we're having. What are our strategies around that currently or for the future to maybe broaden the amount of visible deterrent that might impact this?
I'll answer the last question first. I think we're working now to provide the general manager with information as to any type of voluntary participation from entities outside of in the metropolitan area. We're looking at what jurisdictional agencies have that assist their law enforcement agencies, whether it's explorers, whether it's interns, whether it's we're now looking at the possibility of looking back at some of our retired police officers to see if we can have them come in on a part-time basis. We're working with Dave Kubicek in identifying people who are on workers' comp, and we rolled out a program, thanks to Mr. Sauls, that we have what we call the gators out in the parking lots, because we know that that is where the majority of the crime takes place, and it's utilizing those people that are on some type of workers' comp, but they still have the ability to see and listen and pick up the phone and call the transit police. Again, the partnerships with the jurisdictional agencies, where we have provided them with over 300 smart trip cards that affords them the opportunity to randomly go out into our various garages and parking lots and just randomly patrol with the hopes that the bad guys will see this new additional law enforcement presence and not commit any crime. So we are constantly looking at a lot of different opportunities that we are putting forth to the general manager. And again, whether you were present, Ms. Cowan, it was that a lot of these ideas came from our meetings together in trying to come up with ways that we could collectively address crime, working in partnership with our jurisdictional agencies, coming up with ideas that we can be more visible, going out to the various stations and listening to the patrons saying that I love to see transit police, but when I see them, more often than not, I see them around the fare gates. I would like to see them in the parking garages and in the parking lots. So we are working in a concerted effort to do that. Regarding what other transit systems are doing, we meet on a yearly basis with what we call the top 50 transit safety and security chiefs around the country. As a matter of fact, in May of next year, the Metro Transit Police will host this group of people coming in from BART, from Boston, from Atlanta, from Philadelphia, New York, Minnesota, Dallas, Houston, you name it. And there are some great initiatives that have been pushed forth. One that I spoke of earlier was what Dallas does regarding their interactions with students that ride public transit. And they have a connection with the school system that says if you act up on public transit, then you no longer are going to participate in school-related activities. So that's been a good push. We also reached out to Dallas, and Dallas has a program where their violations, when they're observed eating, drinking, smoking, that they pay directly to the transit agency, and it goes directly to the police department. And so resources can be continue to not have an adverse impact on the operations. If, in fact, they fail to do that, then it goes through the traditional court system. And then there's a small percentage of that money that comes back to the police department. There are systems that are predominantly bus systems in Houston that has a lot of the same concerns with bus operator assaults that we do. And through these meetings, when we get together, we come up with ideas as to what's the best practice. And more often than not, the transit agencies are looking to WMATA because we, because of where we are located and the assistance that oftentimes we get from the federal government, we're doing a lot more programs. We're moving ahead a little faster than they are. And so it's a lot of different back and forth with ideas. And at this roundtable meeting in May, again, the idea is to nudge TSA to move away from terrorism into a focus of all hazards, of all crime. And often the way that they're constructed is that they will give funding for terrorism. But we say if you enhance and improve crime, you're going to have a positive impact on terrorism. And so it's getting them to open up their eyes to say that we can protect our bus operators when we have an active shooting. Okay, those are things that can happen any and all times. Give us funding for that. Right now they'll fund an explosive canine dog, but they won't fund a regular patrol dog. And so we're trying to work with Administrator Pistol and the leadership from TSA to come up with ideas that we can utilize in not just this transit system, but transit systems across the country.
Just one brief follow-up with respect to that. Thank you for that very complete answer. I guess the one thing I'd like to drill down a little bit further on, though, is with respect to utilization of less expensive personnel for visible, as a visible deterrent, if you, in fact, you thought that that might be a help, do you have a timetable on a strategy where we might begin to deploy that kind of resource in on the routes that seem to be most impacted?
Again, the general manager has tasked us to provide to him a complete package that sort of represents the collaboration with council, the collaborations with finance, and the collaboration with any other departments to see if, in fact, we can create that policy that affords us the opportunity to do that.
I want not only to look at the effectiveness, but also the liabilities involved. So we're looking at that.
Any other questions? Chief, thank you for the report. Thank you for all the things you're doing. Pass on to the force. We really are proud of them. And happy with the results.
Thank you.
Call the meeting of Safety Security Committee adjourned.